Cedar and Hutch, we are doing something today, unlike the San Francisco 49ers. Technically, the trade deadline just came. There will still be stuff trickling in as we talk here on the YouTubes today.
Yep.
But not terribly unexpected that the Niners stood pat, no?
No, and I think once you saw the price tag for Jermaine Johnson was a second-round pick, that felt like it. Nope. If it was a third, I do think they might have gotten a deal done.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it felt like
it
was all of this was going to be a stretch for them this year.
They've already done their business. They traded draft picks in July. Well, I guess it was August. They made two moves in August. They made a move for Bryce Huff after the draft. They obviously went and got Keon White last year. They just had to add Khalil Davis at the deadline. Just had to do it. Because heaven forbid you didn't add Khalil Davis, who is currently, well, he was retired. Now he's coming back to play in the UFL. So that's
nice.
Awesome.
That's good.
Something I learned yesterday. All three of his tackles will remember where we were. So he was their seventh round pick for this year, which would have been, maybe the market was too rich for that to have meant anything. But how about this? I think that 49ers fans will be thanking John Lynch for not doing anything as much as they curse him currently, because our little monkey brains haven't been satisfied by action in the
immediacy. There was not enough dopamine for the 49ers.
Clearly.
I mean, and I think it's something where when you see other teams making big deals, you're like, I want a deal. I want a trade.
Keeping up with the Joneses. As in Jerry Jones trading for Quentin Williams. Like, you're like, oh, I want that. But if you're asking the New York Jets to save you, maybe you need to reevaluate how you go about your business. Like, I think pretty highly of how the Colts go about their business. Obviously got some connections there. But, like, two first rounds for Sauce Gardner? What are you doing, baby? No. What are you doing, Chris Ballard?
Like,
you finally get your job secured, and you're like, what if I really did something bold and brash and kind of stupid?
Yeah, it's I mean, the message is obviously clear. Daniel Jones is going to be their quarterback, and they're not going to look to the draft for one. Like, they're just going to extend Daniel Jones. Mm-hmm. Probably get like a, you know, Sam Darnold type deal, right? Sure. 3 years, $120 million, something like that. And And then that's what they're just going to run with. And I guess Sauce Gardner is supposed to solve it. Like, I think the problem with Sauce, he is a great man corner. He's got incredible length. He can really cause some problems. But at the same time, how much value does he really add to your team compared to, like, you know, the next few corners on the list? And he can't tackle. I think that's what we go back to in week one last year where they had to bench him. Because he couldn't tackle and the 49ers kept attacking him. That's kind of all I can think about when I go to Sauce Gardner.
Well, we all know island games count triple. And in that game, Kyle Shanahan exposed something that I think had been whispered and discussed. But Sauce Gardner has been trading on a reputation he earned as a rookie. Full stop. He's already gotten paid. And this is kind of what I come to. A lot of Niners fans and frankly just NFL fans out here being like, why aren't they making trades? Well, what the Niners need, because they have, and let me be exact here, $281 million on the cap for next year, which leaves them about $38 million in cap space before rollover, which is fine. That's a good situation. But most of that is pretty strong cash and locked in. And then $311 for 27, which means that they're already over the 2027 salary cap. And they're hoping that Roger cuts some new deals to help him out on that front.
Yeah, so, they'll just keep rolling stuff over and figure it out. But it is like,
the point is
they have an immense amount of money committed.
Correct. So what do they need? They need, again, to be very specific about my word choice, they need cheap, controllable, really good players, right? Whichever order you want, all three of those things have to be true. They have to be cheap in terms of not making a lot of cash. They have to be controllable, as in, hey, they're not going to be a free agent at the end of the year because we're giving up serious draft allocation. And they have to be really good as to then theoretically put the 49ers over the top. You know how many cheap, controllable, really good players are available via trade? Zero. Because you would never, ever, ever trade somebody like that. The only way to get those players is through the NFL draft. And really, the top three rounds of picks in the NFL draft.
Yeah, I think it's something where the 49ers, could they have pushed and like traded a second for Jermaine Johnson, who may or may not be a good edge rusher? Sure, just for the dopamine kick. But I don't think there's any world in which that's like a logical trade or that that really moves the needle for this team this year, which is what you're saying. If you make a trade like that, that, okay, we're going for it this year and it's going to be worth it. I just don't think there's anyone on the market. When I saw the other names, they were either expiring or had multi, you know, $20 million deals per year. It just didn't really make sense for this team. And yeah, they need players. Like, they actually tangibly need players.
Right.
But I think you have to weigh, is a random free agent off the street going to be that much different than a guy we're bringing in midseason, midweek, who's on the market for a reason? And how much better is this guy on the market than what we're picking up?
There is something to have been said for the Niners using the draft capital that they had already used to go and pick up some players that you're effectively jumping the line yeah. in waivers, kind of the same way they did it in August. Like that would have been okay. I would have had no problem with that because
Can't trade any other picks except for their
exactly.
first. So
they couldn't. Right. Because the fourth and the fifth round is tied up with Huff. You got a sixth and a seventh that are tied up. They just weren't in a position to trade anything. And then you don't want to be selling 27 picks at the 50% discount, because then what would have been a 26-7th, well, that's actually now a 27-5th.
Right.
And okay, that doesn't seem like very good business. Basically, you're buying a pick with a credit card at an exorbitant interest yeah. rate.
To me, it's like what name out there that was traded today would have made a difference. Like Quinnen Williams is probably the only player. And in what world is that making enough of a difference to warrant the cost? There's no world.
No.
So,
first round pick is something this team could not give up under any circumstances.
I think the only thing you could have looked at if you're the 49ers is like trying to move like a wide receiver, something like that. But Juwan Jennings is the most logical candidate, and he's way too injured. I just don't think any team is really desperate for him. And it's something
Juwan Jennings is like the poster child on, oh, if you want to give him to us, we'll take him.
Right. He's also slow. Like he's a good player, but teams like look for speed. Like that's what they tried to add.
Well, what did Seattle just add?
That's exactly where I'm going with it. Raheed Shaheed is just like a perfect fit for them in terms of speed and slot prowess and just a fit for their offense. I think Juwan is a particular player where if you need like a blocker, and he's not like been a good blocker this season, there's just no real good move, I think, for them to make at this point. I think they sniffed around. They tried to think about getting Jermaine Johnson for a third. It wasn't there. And so they went, all right, well, we don't have options in the fourth through seventh, so we'll stand pat because what other choice do we have?
Yeah. I mean, again, they already kind of shot their wad on this one. The Keon White trade was the last deal that they were going to make, and it was telegraphed in the basis of they didn't have any money. You can't go shop if you don't have any money. And I suppose you could say that, yeah, you can get out the credit card or you can, you know, go pawn some stuff, but it's just not good football team building policy. And for all the 49ers fans, and I'll just call you out specifically, for all the 49ers fans who say, oh, they suck at drafting, never use draft picks. Well, that's a great way to be a shitty team forever, because this team's already capped out, not literally, but spending wise. Jed York ain't spending any more money. Take it up with him. That's not our call. That's his call. They're not spending any more money. They're up against it. They get $300 million every year. That's what they spend every year. They've already allocated that money moving forward. They have to build a foundation for the star players that they already have under contract that is strong enough, and we knew coming into the season it wasn't going to be strong enough. They have to build up that foundation of good, young, controllable players that are cheap around them, and they still need a draft or two to do that, and it might never get there. But I'll tell you the one way they're not going to get over that hump, spending more in free agency, which they don't really have either the will nor the cap means to do, or trading for guys.
I mean, go back to this offseason. It was like a fundamental rejection of what they've tried to do, which is where they brought in Javon Hargrave and Leonard Floyd and all these sort of mid high tier players who were older on the wrong side of 30 or near it, mm-hmm. who just didn't provide any, like Malik Collins and all those guys, it just didn't provide enough value for them. And they said, all right, we have cap constraints. We're going to get younger. We're going to get ideally healthier. That has not panned out.
Nope.
You can't really control that. Well, depending on who you hire and your training staff.
We don't know enough about it to say one way or another.
No, we do. We do not. That was the goal.
That was a nice Freudian slip.
Thank you.
Jake's been a doctor this whole time.
They had to get younger, and they made a conscious effort to do that. Jed went explicitly cheap and saved himself some cash, which was fair given how last season went. And so the idea that they'd go in and get someone who didn't match up with the timeline, like a Bradley Chubb or something, guys who have like history of ACL injuries and are highly priced at the deadline for a team that's already ailing, it just never made sense. And I get frustration in that you're like, we're 6-3, we're right in it. Maybe, but you just don't have the horses, I think, on defense, even if you added a guy. And I think trying to chase it would be pretty irresponsible.
So right now, the Niners, let me just go off the top of my head here. They got a first, a second, a third. They'll have either a fourth or a fifth based on what happens with the Huff deal and the number of sacks he has, and three comp picks. That's my understanding. I think they're probably going to lose the seventh for the Keon White deal. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
although
they
can, I think it's like a high bar, so they might be able to finagle that.
I thought it was active for 8 games.
Yeah. So they, I mean, that's.
I mean, they'll play him for 8 if he can physically do it. We'll find out if the 49ers is strong with this one. But
yeah, I guess I want.
So 8 games. I mean, clearly there's more than 8 games remaining. Like it's possible, but okay, fine. They have an extra 7. They have. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Maybe 8 picks, maybe 7 picks. That's fine. So I think there's, you know, there's been an outcry. Like, why aren't they doing anything? Again, they already did it all. If Keon White was made as the trade today, as opposed to last Wednesday, would you be complaining that they didn't do anything? No, they heaven forbid they don't wait until the deadline to get their business done. But let's add in this idea of, oh, well, you know, look at the Rams. And the Niners expressly have stated they want to be on the Rams model and their, you know, fuck them picks lifestyle that they had. Let's just remember, okay, yeah, they traded. They didn't have a first-round pick from, oh, Jesus Christ, I'm still scrolling. Jared Goff to Jared Verse, okay? No first-round picks during that stretch. They had, I can't even count, double-digit picks in 3 of those years.
Right.
They had 9 or 8 or 7, and they had nothing but second, third, fourth. They loaded up. They had a bunch of picks. So the idea that the 9, oh, fuck them picks. Okay, that's fine. But they already said that with their low-level picks. They already said that by getting rid of their fourth and their fifth and all. Yeah, they got rid of all of the day 3 picks. They're hoarding day 1 and day 2 picks. You can't... You have to have some draft capital. There is a certain attrition to an NFL roster. So the Niners are, in fact, saying fuck them picks. They're just not willing to say fuck the early picks at the expense of going really in the late rounds and playing that game, which I think is ultimately the smart way to do it, because early picks are almost always better, even if they don't always work out. But you have a much higher hit rate when you have a much bigger pool of talent to select from.
They're going to have a bunch to work with. People are obviously pointing out the 2027 is like the big draft where there's a lot of talent, the Jeremiah Smith draft. There's like going to be a lot of guys available, and that's what I think the Jets picked up.
Yeah.
Which is,
I'm sure it'll work out great for them.
We have to mention that the Cowboys, like, just awesome, just trading away Micah Parsons, and then basically all they did was move up like 15, 20 slots and replace him with Quinnen Williams.
Okay. This is going to be an aggressive take here.
That it's a better move for them?
I don't know if it's better, but it's not horrific.
No, I don't think it's. I don't think it's.
I think they kind of reverse engineered a level of success here. Like, I think it's fine. I think if the trade offer was, again, real hypothetical here, but if for some way the trade offer was Micah Parsons for Quinnen Williams in a first round pick. Given the contractual situation at hand, like I probably would have taken that deal.
Right. And Quinnen's much cheaper. So yeah. I'm not saying I think people are overreacting to how insane it is, mostly because it's Jerry.
It's fun.
And just the way he played it out and looking for like an edge rusher after trading Micah. And I think just the whole negotiations of that.
Yeah.
But like the net of it is, I think fine. I think it's fine for them. I think it's funny given that they are not going to do anything this year, but I mean, their offense is sick. So, I mean, they could make an argument that they're right in the thick of it. So, but I think anything the Cowboys do is also just genuinely hilarious. And I can't wait for the Jets to make use of none of these picks. I think they will hit on like two guys and whiff egregiously on a bunch, and they will almost certainly trade up for someone who doesn't work out, and they will not hit on a quarterback.
I will say on the Jets side, I think that they did good work today. Why stop there? Like, okay, no one wants to give you a second rounder for Johnson. Take the third. You know, like,
right.
Don't get greedy. Just because there's not a bunch of teams, like, just because the Colts aren't feeling themselves and pretending like it's payday, and just because you're dealing with Jerry Jones doesn't mean other teams are just going to fall in line and do dumb shit. But, like, they'll get close. They'll do, you know, maybe a little bit desperate, you know, some desperate stuff. And, you know, don't look a gift horse in the mouth there. So I think that probably should have. I keep going back to the Rams drafts and the F them picks model. Like, their 2022 was unbelievable. Like, they went Kobe Durant, Kyron Williams, Quentin Lake, Darian Kendrick, Daniel Hardy. Daniel Hardy, maybe not so much, but Russ Yeast is in there.
Oh, AJ Russ Kirk, Yeast, brother.
A little Russ Yeast action. They got Ernest Brown in the fifth round in 21, Ben Skoranek in the seventh and 21. Jake Funk was picked just before that, one of our favorites.
R.I.P. Jake Funk.
R.I.P. Jake Funk. Like, it does come down to how well you draft. I do think that the Niners, and then everyone says, oh, they don't draft well. I mean, I'll agree with that. On principle.
It's funny because like they both do and don't. Like they whiff really hard and they hit really hard, and they have struggled to fill the gaps with a lot of like decent pieces in between, which leaves you threadbare when the top heavy guys go down. I mean, they got guys like McKivitz and Jalen Moore were sort of in the middle. I guess Diamador Lenore's in that tier. Like, I mean, 2020, you got you drafted Javon Kinlaw and Brandon Ayuk back to back. Total whiff, total hit.
Well, one of them's getting paid and playing. But maybe this is more of an indictment on the 2025 class than anything, because outside of Mikel and Upton Stout, who's a hit? I mean, we're in November here.
Yeah, I mean, we can go through it. Mikel, who is playing well, but I think people are fair to say he underwhelmed as a pass rusher. I think he's always a guy that was going to win better inside. And also going against Andrew Thomas, this is probably his weakest, I think, pass rushing performance of the season.
Andrew Thomas is first team All-Pro if we vote today.
Right. Alfred Collins, who has had flashes but is nowhere consistent. I mean, almost every play he's losing like 3-4 yards, and then he's tearing away brilliantly. And there's a few plays a game. I mean, if he stays healthy, I think he will put it together going into next year. Mm-hmm. I don't know that happens this year. He's more of a project than I think. I mean, maybe people understood he was a project, but he's a project. Nick Martin, who knows? But you drafted him 75th and he's not playing for you. Upton Stout has been mostly bad, seems to be improving.
Oh, I would say that Stout has really turned a corner. I've liked his last
I agree.
Games.
Yeah. I liked him. I saw a really good play from him where it was like 3rd and 12 and he got exactly to the line to gain and sort of suckered Dart in on a little check down and then drove on the ball really quickly. I loved it.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this game in a second. I think like, he's turning a corner.
Potential. Yeah.
Agreed. But there's an argument you could have had like a guy like Jacob Parrish instead of Nick Barton, whatever. Okay. Stout's okay.
I'd give him a B. I'd give Mikel a B. I'd give Stout a B.
CJ West has just been inactive. Had an awesome camp, hurt his hand or finger, has been inactive.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. Saleh keeps saying he believes in him. Okay. Jordan Watkins has been unhealthy, finally playing. I was impressed with his blocking. Why are you shaking your head?
We don't have enough of a sample size to make a distinctive statement on Jordan.
Impossible to give a referendum. And for the most part, drafts are impossible to give a full referendum on until it's 3 years down the line. But stands,
I don't think it's ridiculous in the modern NFL, especially with a lot of these guys getting a tremendous amount of playing time to get at least a checkpoint now.
From the 49ers standpoint, you were betting on rookies producing. And so you have to evaluate how they've produced for you right now. Jordan James, a ghost.
One day his day will come.
I don't know if there will be a one day. I was like sort of lukewarm on him, and I improved my opinion of him watching him again, but I was never that high on him. I don't know. We'll see. He hasn't played.
We thought he was seventh round or undrafted, and they took him in the
147,
fifth. 147. And, man, again, I get when they sell them, you're like, okay, yeah, I see what they're talking about there. But it felt so specific.
Especially with my boy DJ Giddens available.
Right, who, you know, he has a new teammate in Sauce Gardner. But, yeah, the Jordan James of it all, the Nick Martin of it all, those were the two picks that I think we were both most confused by. Maybe Gergen, Colby and Bergen.
Not Gergen.
My buddy Colby Gergen.
Siegel, who is, I think, a clear win at that slot. I think he's going to play a role for this team. Very strange what's going on there.
Don't
fully
love it.
Inactivated.
Don't love it.
Don't love
really
it.
Get it.
Curtis Rourke, who is like a play for next year. Fine. I think 227, go for it. People seem to be excited about him. Colby at 249 has been a win at that slot. No question about it. And then Junior Bergen, which whatever, it's 252, but you got one player in Michael at pick 11, who's been like, I would say clearly good. Some people will disagree. I've been watching him every game. He was clearly good. Not great.
Can I throw some numbers your way? So Michael had 20 tackles and a sack this season. Okay. Obviously it's more than just the numbers, and I'm being unfair to these other people I'm about to name because I'm not watching them the way I'm watching Michael. Shamar Stewart, 6 tackles, no sacks. Kenneth Grant, 19 tackles, 1.5 sacks for the Dolphins. Actually, not playing that poorly. Walter Nolan hadn't played until Monday night. Looked really good.
Looked like a game wrecker.
Big fan.
Again, other concerns with him, too, to be clear. And some of that stuff may or may not manifest in his career, and we'll see.
James Pierce, who got the Sauce Gardner package, 2 first-round picks, in effect. 8 tackles, 0 sacks. Good job, Atlanta. Derek Harmon, pretty good. 13 tackles, 2 sacks. Tyleek Williams, 6 tackles, 0 sacks. You can make an argument.
I think the only other player you could really make an argument for is Walter Nolan. I think that was the only other
one game. Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, if you look at all of the first round defensive linemen taken that were available to the Niners, Michael is, I would argue, I haven't watched a tremendous amount of the Dolphins defense, and I'm certainly not that keen to watch Kenneth Grant. But you could argue that he's been the best.
Did you forget the Browns guy, the defensive tackle?
Who's the Browns guy?
You don't remember? It was a kid from Michigan, the other kid from Michigan.
Yeah, he wasn't available to the Niners.
Right. Okay. I thought we were just comparing all.
The Niners come on the board at number 11. Yes. Who was available for them to take?
Fair. I was just throwing it out there that I don't think
Mason Graham has been fine. I think he's looked pretty good, actually. I don't watch a lot of Browns games because, you know, I'm trying to continue to wanting to live, which is harder every day. So, I am of the mindset that Michael was a hit.
No, I think no question about it. Again, I've literally gone through and graded every single snap of this defensive line. I think, again, he's 20 years old. His pass rushing is definitely has a ways to go.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we overestimated that. I think we knew it was going to be a project. I think the Niners wanted it to come along a little quicker, but they also thought he was going to have Nick Bosa playing with him, and it looked pretty damn good when they were able to mix and match and play Huff and Bosa and Yitor Gross-Matos and him, and then it became all on him almost entirely.
Never forget that, you know, at Georgia, they run the 4-0-4. They run the mint front, the tight front, whatever you call it. And this is an interesting note. I talked to Larry last night because I'm a masochist, and he brought up that at practice, I guess in the visible part of practice, Kucerik's really been getting after his young defensive linemen to keep their feet moving. And I actually found that to be interesting, rarity, where they get blocked and then they stop. And that is a specific coaching point that most college teams are operating on, because there's a lot of screens and they're running a gap and a half system, which is
Sorry, brief aside. I know this is just an aside, but like Mikel was fucking outstanding against screens. He actually blew up like a half dozen of them this season just because he read them really well. I know that's like a minor part that you're gonna look at, but like
no, it matters
with his length, like it's actually a pretty impressive factor, and his general feel and IQ was pretty impressive on those plays. Anyway, continue.
But he's a guy who was playing 4-eye. And right. Now you're trying in the last couple of games, you're lining him up as a true nine tech. Like to imply that that's something that he should just take to immediately when you knew that his pass rushing bag was limited, if not non-existent. I just feel like, okay, I agree. Not ideal, right? You want the full package,
right?
But you can teach bag. You cannot. And I know this sounds counterintuitive. Like, I really don't think that you can teach a guy how to be a good run defender. That feels innate. It feels like somebody who's like a great rebounder.
I think you can get a lot better. I think it's like if you're coached poorly and you have the frame and size and you just need to learn. But like there's a level of aggression and commitment you need, I think, to be able to be productive in the run game.
So when you just look at it, you just think, okay, what was he asked to do under ideal circumstances, which of course we know don't last. And it was, hey, stop the run. Be a cool third down effort rusher. Did he do that? I think he did it with you know, passed with flying colors. And when he was asked to do things that they're hoping, and I think should be expected of him down the line, but when they asked him to do it today, he wasn't ready for it. And I thought it was interesting that Kyle said that he thought that Mikel, more than anybody on the team, needed the bye week, that he was just tired. Yep. And when you fight through injury and you rehab all the way up to training camp and then you rehab through training camp and you get thrown in there for like 50 snaps
off every week too,
50 snaps a game, fighting double teams, playing multiple positions along the line, like both mentally and physically taxing in a crazy way. And he's battling injury, like battling injuries of the past, battling new injuries. I think he had an oblique thing. Like I get
it. It's going to be very interesting to watch how they handle the run game without it. I don't think they will either. I think it's going to be really difficult.
Okay, let's do this super here, Joseph. This team needs to lose games for draft. I disagree. I mean, like, again, this ideal that, oh, well, you know, now they're all about the draft. Like, two things can be true at one time. You can continue to try to win while not jeopardizing your future and being all in on this idea.
Totally.
Making a move for the sake of making a move.
They're a team that's headed for somewhere in the range of like at worst 14 to like 22. That feels to me maybe like mid 20s. I mean, if everything goes well for them, but like they don't have, they're not going to have a lot of wiggle room. Like they've already won six games. They're not going to lose out. So one, I just think that's impractical and illogical. And they're playing the Titans and they have some other easy games on their schedule where they're just going to win at least nine. Like, even if it goes terribly, I think they're winning at least nine games down the stretch. So like, and I think from a fundamental, or sorry, did I say nine? Yeah. I think they're winning at least nine.
Yeah.
But I think from a fundamental standpoint, coaching standpoint, building a team, like you have to compete. You can't get in this thing of complacency and like trying to shut it down. And these rookies, I think these young guys need an example of like, we actually play to the end, even if our team is sort of cooked. I know that might sound coach speaky and corny, but like the idea of shutting it down midseason when you're 6-3 is just not realistic.
Well, let's also note, and they're going to sell this and it's going to come across as so disingenuous, but there is a level of truth to this. They have Brock Purdy, Bryce Huff, in theory, Ricky Pearsall, in theory, Brandon Ayuk, in theory, Ben Bartsch, coming back. Like, it's not as if all of the injured players are injured forever, though it might be the case with Ayuk and Pearsall. Like, I can't tell you they're playing again. So they will make the argument that so many teams before them have, which is actually we don't need to make as many trades as you think we need to make right now because we have all of these guys coming back. We'll add from within. We'll look a little bit better. And it's actually kind of difficult to not agree with that. If Bryce Huff is back for the Rams game, that really matters.
Huff coming back. I don't know when Pearsall is coming back. Purdy coming back at some point, even though his toe is just never going to heal, I guess, this season, which is a fun little wrinkle that Kyle threw in there. So, like, you have – I think they're counting on their offense. They're counting on at some point Pearsall will be back and Purdy will be back and the offense will look better and Huff will try and single-handedly fix their pass rush issues and maybe Gross Matos will let them bench Keon White for two. I don't know. I don't think you can say based on them being 6-3 that they should spend a third round pick to get a 1-year rental and that that's going to solve it. I understand you have an obligation to compete, but I do think it is logical for them to look at their roster and say, look at the guys we don't have playing. They're going to come back.
I also just, I fundamentally don't understand the argument that, oh, well, they're bad at drafting, which is a point of argument. Like we can get into that, or we have. That's all we kind of do. Okay, but let's just engage with the premise. Oh, they're bad at drafting, therefore they should get rid of all of their draft picks. Well, okay, there's also something called politics and career preservation. And if John Lynch is out here being like, oh yeah, we're not going to have any draft picks, what does that say about John Lynch? Like, doesn't John Lynch tacitly state in that action that he's terrible at his job and doesn't deserve to be in it? Like, why would he openly admit that? Oh, well, we can't possibly pick well in the third round. I mean, Fred Warner could argue that they do. But like, oh, we don't pick well in the third round, so get rid of that pick. Like, what a weird reverse engineering bit of logic. No, it's a top 100 pick. And yes, they have not been particularly good in the third round, save for that one time where they were exceptionally good and might have covered them for the rest of time. But they've done fine in the first round. They've done fine in the second round. Like, they need those picks. Those are high caliber prospects.
Regardless of what their track record is, you have to believe every year that their valuable picks and those selections are valuable, and that's where you get high quality talent. And even if it doesn't pan out, the process is like betting on those picks will eventually net you quality players.
Yeah, 100%. And again, if John Lynch is... I've made this argument before. John Lynch is bad at drafting. Let Jed York fire him. I can make the argument for and against John Lynch being the GM of the team. So go to town. But the idea that they're going to not have any draft picks, because again, they already spent all of their spending money in August, last week, in March. When did they make that trade for Huff? April, March? Who doesn't matter? Summer. They already spent all their spending money, and this team is not in a position to start spending draft pick capital at a usury interest rate. Like, it's just, that'd be downright malpractice. Pardon?
I said Ariante usury.
Yeah. Well, then again, a lot of people probably who are claiming now to make picks were also, or to trade picks were probably clamoring for him because he big.
Yeah.
Do we even want to
talk about the Giants game?
Okay. I will slightly talk about the Giants game. You and I actually are in a bit of disagreement on Spencer Burford in that game.
Oh, you're wrong.
I thought he was pretty good.
Nah, he got bodied a few times.
I'll tell you what I really saw in Burford having watched it, which is such a baseline statement. Having watched it, which I definitely did, I can see the tackle in him.
That's the thing I was gonna say, is I think he struggled and had some really bad moments, but I still liked it. Like, does that make sense? That, yes. I still like the movements, and it felt like he hasn't played left guard in a while, and so I'd like to keep seeing it. And I also like when he's on the move in space, there's a lot of like good feel there.
Yeah.
I'd like to keep seeing him on the field, but I do think there were some times he got really bodied and it was pretty bad. But it's not that he was terrible on every single snap, but there were a few plays he got really good.
Yeah, he got beat to the left side a couple of times. Some of that does feel like a protection issue that I can't quite diagnose. But listen, yeah, no, he got beat a couple times. Sure, everyone did. And, I mean, even Pooney, who I thought had a really nice game, did have one rep where he just kept stepping backwards all the way into Mac's lap. Yeah. And you're like, okay. I guess
I texted you. I think Pooney is not fully back, but he's
getting there.
He's getting there.
I thought the offensive line was actually really impressive in this game. And the one sort of downside would have been McKivitz against Brian Burns. The book is out on McKivitz. You can beat him with speed. The good news is that there are not that many good speed rushers left in the NFL. Actually, there's just not that many good defensive ends in the NFL right now, in my opinion.
By the way, it was like a dream matchup for Trent Williams, who absolutely ragdolled Abdul Carter at one point in this game, which was so predictable. Like, oh, the little skinny bendy rookie who everyone's obsessed
with.
Have
fun with that.
Trent was like buckling, like he was ready for power, and then he's like, oh wait, he can't. Okay.
Pop. Bye. he kind of like Three Stooged him. He just kind of popping him on the head.
Do you think Trent has a resurgent year next year? I mean, he's clearly getting older, but do you think like rehabbing the knee for a full offseason and he comes in healthy? Like, do you think he's resurgent, or do you think this is part of a downturn?
I think it's part of a downturn. I think that there will be moments where he looks like the full Trent Williams, and then he'll get injured again, because that's what the downturn really is. It's not like he lost a step or anything. He just gets injured more. This is the same argument I'd make for Steph Curry and the Warriors. Steph Curry's the same player he was 10 years ago. You know, like, he's unbelievable when he was winning MVPs. The problem is he just gets injured more now. And that's true greatness. That your play never really declines, just your availability does. Like, LeBron is a great example of this. And it's inarguable to say that he'll ever be like peak LeBron again, but he's still an all NBA caliber player. He just doesn't play enough. And that's where we're at with Trent. Now, you know, the good news is that he is still, in fact, out there, but he is clearly injured, and a lesser man would be so bad with this injury that he'd be unplayable, but he's still playable because he's Trent Williams, and he does in fact have several steps to lose. So I think it's kind of a lawyer cop-out answer, but I don't think that it will be a skill set issue. I think it will be an injury issue, and I just can't foresee a circumstance. I mean, it'd be luck if he stayed healthy at this point, just given where he's at in his career and the wear and tear on the tires. But you take it. You take every snap you can get from Trent Williams, because it might be one of the great left tackles of all time, if not the greatest.
I'm with you. Closing the book on the Giants, I think I didn't even have that many takeaways other than that the Giants really suck.
Yes, they
suck. And Jackson Dart, I've never seen the media treat a quarterback quite like the way they're treating Jackson Dart. It's borderline sexual. It's freaking me out. It's very weird. And
he just gets them going, you watch him loins.
And you go, oh, he was supposed to, it was actually schemed up really well by Daboll to pull the linebacker down, open up the window so you can rip the dig, and his feet are sideways and there's no pressure on him. And I'm like, what are we talking about here? Like, what do you mean he's seeing it? I don't think he's seeing it. I think he's fun. I think he does some cool shit. I think he can run. I don't think he's seeing it at all.
He is, he's all vibes. He's all vibes. He's a bigger Kyler Murray, and it's not going to age well.
Hard to watch their offense in general. And their tight end, by the way, who they keep feeding Theo Johnson, who's like very athletic and can do fun stuff with the ball in his hands. Not a fan of him at all. Not a fan of his game.
He's a very big wide receiver who's not actually that athletic for a tight end.
First two snaps of the game, Michael pretty much put him on his ass.
Yeah. I think Bellinger was out for that game. When you watch the tape, they really like Bellinger. We liked Bellinger back in the day.
Daniel Bellinger, and I came around. Yeah.
I mean, listen, he's fine. He's serviceable. He'll be in the league for 8-9 years. A Luke Musgravy type, right? Like, no Tucker Kraft, but more of a Luke Musgravy type. And by the way, get in your waiver claims now in fantasy football. But it is, yeah, that situation is a really tough one moving forward. I feel bad for someone's going to take the gig of director of football ops, and someone's going to take the gig as head coach. I'm not sure it won't be a Cowboys-like situation where they have some like big-time names that they want to go for both of those jobs, and those guys be like, "No, we're good." Like, right. Because I don't think John Mara is like a particularly terrible owner, but I do think that the situation they've been left with, just a quick analogy. So like, we bought our house in Alameda right before the pandemic, and there was some work that needed to be done, but nothing crazy, totally livable, totally functional. We haven't gotten a lot of that work done, frankly, because it's just fine. But you know, you could see like, hey, this is some dated stuff or whatever. Our next door neighbors, total wackos when we first moved in, like borderline hoarders, kind of old guy. They jump out because of like freedom or some nonsense during the pandemic. Right. And we have great new neighbors now. Big fans of our neighbors, both sides. And our houses are almost the exact same. And their situation is like, oh my God, like we have to do so much work. They paid more for the house, just bad circumstance, and they have to do so much more work to put into it. And that is kind of the situation that aspiring head coaches are going to be looking at. Every team is, if you're firing a coach, no one's going into a ready set situation. But do you want to go into the situation where you're going to have to tear everything down to the studs and build for years? Because that's what you're going to have to do with the Giants. Or do you want to go to a better one?
I will say that's kind of my dream as a GM is in Madden. I mean, this is the perfect time to take over the Jets in a Madden franchise. Let me tell you.
I don't disagree with that. And I do think that the Jets are in a situation to where it's been so particularly bad for so long, they can't compound their mistakes, or they can't like double down on success and make bad decisions based on sort of that fleeting elixir of we were good that one time, which the Giants fall into every now and again because they were in a terrible division for a very long time, because Washington was a stepping stone and you know, the Eagles hadn't ascended fully yet, and the Cowboys are going to cowboy. So they would get away with it every now and again. And every now and again, they'd run into it. And that then gave, you know, Daniel Jones got a huge new contract. Whereas the Jets don't have anything like that.
Right.
And the time that they actually kind of did make mistakes, they just got off them in Sauce Gardner. And I wouldn't argue Critton Williams was a mistake, but if someone's going to give you a first, you take the first.
Yeah.
So,
and a second. It's a first and a second.
So. Oh, yeah. You just deal.
Yeah. It's a second this year and a first next year. And
you have they a new got regime there and all that. Yeah.
And they got Adonai Mitchell with it, too.
So I am...
That was with the Sauce trade.
I will say this. I don't know who's going to get that GM job or the head coaching job. Both of those are going to be available. I will make a guess right now, a prediction right now, that it is going to be retreads for both of those gigs. That no young, hotshot, aspiring personnel guy is going to choose that team over the three or four other options at minimum he'll have. And that no viable new up and coming head coach, like a Joe Brady, for example, right?
Right.
Like that he'll be like, nah, I'm not going there. Because people say, the New York media, you have Jackson Dart, you're coming into a great situation. Then those people will watch the tape and they'll be like, this is not good. I'm beholden to this guy. Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah, and your only skill position player is Malik Nabers coming off an ACL. So, not superb.
I think they're fine. I think it'll be okay.
Should we get to some comments and then get out of here?
I think that's a great idea, Jake. I feel like I'm already running on fumes, my friend.
I think you started this one. Prod Beam?
Yeah. Okay, so why did they not send Jair Brown to his daddy Wilkes, at least if you don't want to buy? Because Steve Wilkes doesn't actually want him. Also, I don't think Steve Wilkes has the ability to buy anybody.
Also, Jair made some nice plays. I think he's been okay, other than getting absolutely cooked 2 weeks ago on that touchdown.
I mean, the Jets in the market for Jair Brown? Come on now.
No.
Come on now.
The only player I would have wanted was Quinnen Williams. I just don't think there's a world where the Niners are paying that price tag. Doesn't make any sense.
No, it's not just the draft price tag. Let me pull up the contract. I should have had this prepared. I would have been a real pro.
It's tough to pull up contracts. It pulls a lot on your computer.
That's a your computer problem.
Well,
Quinnen Williams, 21 against the cap next year, 25 against the cap the year after that. Though it's really just the remainder of this year and next year. Yeah, it's manageable.
Yep.
They've already paid out most of it. Now, I will say that Quinton Williams at 28 years old is going to go to the Dallas Cowboys at the end of this season and say, hey, let's work out a new deal.
Yep.
Because he doesn't have any guaranteed money in 27. So
a lot of people, we should just, I mean, so they should replace John Lynch. A lot of people are throwing this out there.
That's fine. Go ahead. I can't make the argument for keeping him, but I also can't make the argument for firing him.
I think he delegates a lot to, I think they do have a lot of sharp people and they delegate a lot and they probably delegate too much in certain ways where there's like an obsession with consensus. And certain times they get far, far, far too cute with some of their decisions. And sometimes they absolutely nail it. So I think firing Lynch is like, is that solving the problem? I mean, I guess probably if you bring in somebody who's just pretty sharp. But yeah, I can't make an argument kind of one way or the other because I feel like it's a lot of hiring other people who do a lot of legwork.
I just love this argument that the guy, oh, he's not a real GM, or this argument that, oh, actually Kyle's running all of it. And
Kyle's not.
No, he isn't. I'm telling you
very
right now.
Clearly not.
The 49ers' biggest issue this past year, I'm with you, Jake, that they have this kumbaya mentality. And that's really, you know, Lynch is not a noted personnel guy, though I do think he deserves more credit in that regard. He's not, you know, didn't have some scouting background. Their scouting department is kind of a joke, something I've brought up here and in many other places. It's not well respected around the league, to say the least. A lot of that has been, you know, guys getting poached away. Their analytics department, which I think a lot of teams do somewhat respect, has also been poached, with their main analytics guys running other situations now or being, you know, promoted to their point of incompetence. All that delegation, I don't think they've replaced on their roster or in their front office all the talent that has left, and I don't think they had as much talent in that front office as they did on the roster. So John was hired initially to do all of the political stuff that Kyle didn't want to do, which is handle sort of, you know, the minutia of the roster, to handle all of the, you know, glad handing and, you know, photo taking that has to come around with being sort of the main guy for the team, or at least the personnel side. And over time, Kyle made so many bad decisions come draft time and with free agency that he ceded verbally more and more power to John and John's way of going about business. And John, you're right, it enables a lot of people to do their jobs. I think now he's left in a situation where there's a lot of guys and gals on that staff that aren't particularly great at their jobs. And I think this all manifested come draft time when they go, and Jed has a hand in this, at draft time when they basically outsource the entire scouting department to their coaching staff. And the scouts were basically there to cross-check stuff, but not to really bring stuff forward. And Robert Saleh got to pick as many players as he wanted. And Chris Kucerik got to pick as many players as he wanted. And, you know, Kyle got to pick his couple players every year, though he stayed out of it more this year, I've heard, than in past years, mainly because he kind of had to do a mea culpa over the Aiyuk situation, which he pulled rank on at the last second again. The idea, though, that John Lynch is not a real GM is somewhat laughable. Name some people that should come in and replace him. Name some people who can manage the weird political landscape that the 49ers have going on with an owner who drops in every 6 months and, you know, demands fealty, and a head coach that actually has all the power but doesn't really want to do all the things that have power until it really comes, push comes to shove, and then he actually wants that power. Like, find me someone who can so deftly manage all of it. And, by the way, keep all of this shit generally out of the media. So
yeah, they
find
do a
me
very
that
good job of that. And maybe they prioritize that too much.
They absolutely do. And so I have to get everything from other scouting departments and guys talking to other dudes on the road and all that. Like, they don't leak from 49-49. That was John Lynch's initial mandate, frankly, when he showed up. The leaks were out of control with Bulky and everybody else in that front office. And Jed was over it. And again, you know, oh, Jed should sell the team. Ain't going to happen. Can't fire owners. Oh, well, John Lynch isn't a real GM. Built two teams that went to Super Bowls. Built one of the best teams I've seen in the last 25 years of NFL football. Couldn't get over the hump, but the 23-49ers, an absolute fucking wagon. I find it ridiculous. This what have you done for me lately of it all is really embarrassing, frankly, for all you. Again, if Keon White was the deal that they made today, would y'all be bitching this much? I don't think so.
Probably not.
And I don't think they're doing a good job. Like, how am I the defender of the 49ers front office here? Like, you're going to be thanking him. You're going to be thanking John Lynch for not being rash and short-sighted and trading away a first or a second or a third round pick. You're going to be thanking him come draft.
I think it's fair to want them to do something just for, in the abstract, knowing that they're 6-3, 3-0 in the division, got a crucial game coming up. Hey, if we add a piece, get a win against the Rams, like, we can win this division and anything can happen in the playoffs. At the same time, knowing, like, there's not really a good person available for a third round pick. You're not touching the first two. And it's just not rational. Like, they're not one piece away from being a Super Bowl contender. And so as much as it's like, I know you want to scratch that itch, I just don't think it makes a lot of sense.
There's just no rationality to it. There just really isn't. This isn't fucking Madden.
I think there's a more important question you have to answer, which is, if Kyler doesn't start for the rest of the year, do you not do your Kyler impression?
I've stopped doing my Kyler impression.
God damn it. That actually scared me. Yeah. I think we should end there. just with Dieter's horrible Kyler Murray impression.
Bye.
See ya.